FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz, and today's November 20th, 2017. It's hard to believe, but 30 short years ago, we had a major crash. And if it was to happen in today's market, it would be the equivalent of a 5,000 plus point decline, which is, as someone in the White House would say, pretty huge. And the question is, can it happen again? Well, first, we love getting your emails. We love for you to participate in the show. Send us an email, kl@carrielutz.com, or use the Twitter feed at Carrie Lutz. So Michael Eastham is with us now. And you know, Michael has been on the show many times, Fellowship Financial. And Michael, welcome back. And what about that crash? Can it happen again?
Sure, Carrie. Thanks again so much for having me back. Enjoy being on your program. And yeah, I think it certainly could happen again. I mean, if you study stock market history like I have, I mean, history is an indicator that it's very likely that we're going to see at least another major correction. Now, is it going to be a 7,000 point drop on the Dow? I don't know, but I think part of the problem in today's environment is that there are so many moving parts. Number two is that people get so complacent when the market gets to all-time highs, they just forget that there can be a correction. And those corrections can be very damaging to people's portfolios, specifically the people who are close to retirement or in retirement and relying on those investments for income.
Yeah, well, and those are the people who are most likely to take the hit, flee the market, and not come back if and when it recovers, right? They're always zigging when they should zag and zagging when you should zig.
That's right. And doing the opposite is very difficult. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, who wants to sell when the market's up? Nobody does. And so it's very difficult to do that. You have to take a contrarian approach. And I just want to make sure that people realize that one of the things that I tell people is pigs get fed and hogs get slaughtered. You know, when is the best time to sell? When the market's up. So if you've been in the market since 2009, you've experienced some dramatic gains. And it might be a good time to just take some of those gains off the table and lock in those gains, because really, if you're invested for performance or you're invested for growth, then you don't have any gains until you actually sell. So if you lock those in, well, then you can take advantage of either A, some other opportunities, or at least protecting yourself against the likelihood of a drop in the market. And that doesn't mean you have to take all your money and put it in cash, but every situation's a little bit different. And the folks that I talk to on a regular basis are folks that are in what I call the retirement red zone. And I talk about this in my book, Common Sense Income Strategies. I write about it a lot. I talk about it on my radio program. You know, the 10 years before retirement, and 5 years into retirement. That's the retirement red zone, where you have to evaluate your strategy and make sure that it's in line with your goals and you're not taking too much risk.
Yeah, so I'm always reminded when we have this discussion of when do you get out and when do you take your profits of the great legendary investor Bernard Baruch, who said, I got rich by letting the other guy make the last 10%.
I think that's a great strategy. I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, look, even the momentum of the market, forget about economic things, because that's a whole other topic. There's a total disconnect in my mind between the economy and the stock market. But even if the momentum of the market right now pushes it up another 10%, you have to ask yourself, what's the downside risk? And the downside risk could be 30%. I mean, it could be 40 or 50%. We've seen that happen before in just in this century. So it's almost like you go to a casino and you tell me, I mean, if you sat down at a table where you realize if you win $10, but you lose $40, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you're not going to play at that game. I mean, I know I'm not, but unfortunately,
for sure,
too many people are doing that.
But I guess the question is this situation analogous to walking into that casino? The economy seems to have kind of taken off since Trump. Atlanta Fed's now saying that fourth quarter growth is going to be 3.5%. If we throw in some tax cuts into the mix, then it really could be flying.
It sure could, but you have to ask yourself, is where it is right now reflective of some of the market or some of the tax cuts already? I believe a lot of it's baked in. And so we'll have to see. My concern is that there's a lot of speculation going on in the market. And you just have to evaluate yourself. Like I said a minute ago, it's not like you have to take all your money and put it in a mattress. That's not what I'm saying at all. But it's really, this is a good time for people to evaluate their strategies hard. And really, I see it, you know, what are the alternatives that are out there? What are the things that I can invest in to reduce my risk some and maybe invest for income? Invest for interest and dividends so that you don't have to worry as much about the risk of a market downturn. And some of it may go sit in cash for a little while. I mean, there's a reason the rich get richer. It's because they have cash when the market does correct and they've got money to redeploy at that time.
You know, one thing you mentioned, Michael, is that back in 1987, there was no such thing as an exchange-traded fund. So right. An exchange-traded fund, in this case of a declining market, could be kind of like adding accelerant to the fire.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. I mean, it's an untested in terms of the magnitude of ETFs with respect to any kind of a, you know, call it a black swan event or a major market correction. And especially where people are moving so much money on a daily and monthly basis from mutual funds into ETFs because they like the flexibility, they like the liquidity. But at the same time, with that liquidity and with the volume of money that's already been put into them, there's a lot more downside leverage on when the market does correct. And we don't know how that's going to actually play itself out.
Hey, one thing I wanted to talk about, Michael, is Dodd-Frank and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. So the Antichrist of capitalism, Richard Cordray, has announced his retirement. And I think if it wasn't effective immediately, it could be even sooner, and saved Trump the trouble of having to eventually fire him, which was inevitable. But he's basically put his budget director, Mick Mulvaney, in charge of the CFPB. And then you've got the desire of the Fed to loosen up on regulation and accountability on all but the largest 10 banks, the true too big to fail banks. What effect, if any, are those two outcomes or those two events going to have on the economy?
Well, I think it really depends. I mean, I think financial institutions learned a big lesson in 2008. And unfortunately, it was too late. I mean, but so my hope is that they've taken some of that to heart. Many of them have changed leadership. They've changed strategies, and they realize that there's got to be more transparency and accountability, and not just going after how do we manage shareholder expectations with the ethics and the moral obligation you have of running a firm with a fiduciary mindset. And so I think it's yet to be seen what's actually going to happen there. But I do think that some of the compliance things, and look, I'm not a big government guy at all. I mean, I'm very much of a let capitalism develop on its own. And so it bothers me when we see too many constricting regulations, but at the same time, people have to acknowledge and they have to embrace the fiduciary aspect of what they're doing and the individual lives that are affected if they just get greedy.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of greed to go around. We all know that. But Michael, when you look, I'm a libertarian, except when I get to an intersection. I prefer that the stoplights work. And when I get on an airplane, I'd prefer that there be air traffic controllers rather than letting the free market decide what airplane gets what space in the sky. And, you need a referee. You need somebody just to see that the fraud, the ripoffs, which we've seen monumental ripoffs both before the financial crisis and after the financial crisis, but the CFPB and Dodd-Frank have not really changed any of that, have they?
No, I'm really a firm believer in a dynamic framework that gives industry the ability to flex and make decisions and make changes in real time rather than having to worry about big brother on their back. And you know, you talk about the Fed. One of the things that bothers me the most right now is that, first of all, that the Fed has gotten so intertwined with the stock market. But number two, in their own regard, in the Fed's own right, they haven't made decisions with any amount of conviction. And I think that's very telling of where they are. They'd love to raise interest rates because the market is booming, because the economy is moving along. But the fact that they can't because of market pressures, there's no real measurable inflation to speak of. They're scratching their heads trying to figure it out. And right now, you think about the fact that, okay, we're going to start unwinding quantitative easing and taking money out of the money supply. They dumped $4 trillion into the money supply from 2008 on with all of the quantitative easing and then the bond buying, all of that kind of stuff. Now they're talking about taking all that money out. That's a big red flag in my mind. We've never seen that type of retirement of cash before. And so, you know, those are some legitimate concerns that, forget about the economic side, what kind of an effect is that going to have on the overall market?
Good question, for which we might very well have an answer. They haven't embraced that withdrawal from the markets really wholeheartedly, really with enthusiasm yet, though, have they?
No, they haven't. And that goes along with their entire, rate management. They'd love to see inflation hit 2%. They haven't seen it present itself near that level yet. And usually you've got a booming economy. You got price inflation. You've got wage inflation, all those things that the Fed is concerned about. So they want to raise rates, but they just can't for reasons that go beyond probably our discussion here today. But they literally cannot raise rates too much higher. They don't want to flatten the yield curve because that'll blow up the benefits in the economy and the financial sector to even lend money. So they've got to be very careful. And I think that's probably one of the biggest reasons why they don't have any conviction in what they're doing.
Yeah. And you really see that they keep promising a lot more on the interest rate front than they've delivered,
right,
and in all likelihood can deliver. So are we in a permanent low interest rate environment until something really hits the fan here, Michael?
Well, I don't think that's out of the picture. I mean, just look at Japan. Japan's been in effectively a zero rate interest environment for, 25 years. So, and they can't get out of it as well. And I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it's certainly within the realm of possibility because it's already happened before.
Yeah, it's happened before. So we just have pretty much until something happens more of the same to look forward to.
Yep. That's right. I totally agree.
Mm. So, which I guess isn't terrible, but it ain't great. But if growth really picks up, it's going to put pressure on the system, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it'll be unknown until it actually happens. We won't know exactly how the system reacts until we start seeing it. And that's why I want people to not be complacent. Like we talked about at the very beginning of our conversation, Kerry, people can't be complacent in a time where we've got a market at an all-time high. Got to be prudent. They've got to take measured risk and not be overexposed to the impacts of a market correction, especially if you're close to retirement or even in retirement. I mean, if you lost 30% of your retirement portfolio and you have to rely on that for income, then you're going to be in a world of hurt when that day comes. So, evaluating your strategy, managing true risk, which isn't always defined by Wall Street, and making sure that the strategy that you have in place for your investments supports the goals that you have.
Yeah, and just one final thing is that, when you look at the market, nobody ever reasonably expected it to get to this point, Michael. And yet,
right,
here we are. Isn't it possible that it could go a lot higher? Because the very things that maybe endanger it or would keep the money flowing into the market, mainly lack of alternatives, and, stocks climb on a wall of worry. This has never been a loved bull market, has it?
No, it really hasn't. And I think you got a great point there. The fact that people have been forced up the risk curve simply chasing yield, that's not a safe strategy if you think about it.
Mm. Yeah, well, yield, when you look at junk bonds are strictly for professional investors, and even they get burned periodically on them, because they don't really behave as bonds. They're really a phantom equity, if you will, in these over-leveraged companies.
No question. I mean, a bond fund is effectively the stock of a company that owns bonds. So you don't really own those bonds. And I think there's a complete misunderstanding in the consumer investment community about how a bond fund works and whether or not it actually lowers your risk. People have a false sense of security just because they hear the term bond, and they think, okay, well, a bond fund is less risky than the stock market. Well, that's only partially true. Just because you're in a bond fund doesn't mean you can't lose money, and especially in an interest rate environment that we're in right now, all the more reason why you've got to be careful. Because if our clients want to invest in bonds, Carrie, we'll use individual corporate bonds because of the two protections that you have. You know, you have the interest rate guarantee, you have the maturity date, which tells you that if you hold it to maturity, as long as the company doesn't default, you're going to get your principal back. In a bond fund, you have neither one of those, and that means that you're subject to the liquidity needs of the bond fund manager, who's got to buy and sell based on money coming in and money going out. That puts your money at risk if you're the investor.
Yeah, and to get 400 basis points more return to take that kind of risk, probably not worth it. Anyway, Michael, just tell us where we find you, best place to connect with you on the internet.
Yeah, thanks. Best place is just go to fellowshipfinancial.com, fellowshipfinancial.com. You can check out any information that we have. We've got white papers, we've got access to my book, Common Sense Income Strategies. So fellowshipfinancial.com is the best place to go.
All right, and send us emails. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love for you to be part of the show. KL@CarrieLutz.com, Twitter feed @CarrieLutz, Facebook page Financial Survival Network. Michael, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us again.
My pleasure, Carrie, and you have a great week and a happy Thanksgiving.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.